Go to sleep, my baby, my baby, my baby. Go to sleep, my baby, my baby, my baby.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. How often do you get to intro your show with Laurel and Hardy with such a song, huh? Quite a find. This hour, we are going to be giving you some really important advice on the fix for jet lag, what to do about insomnia, and using chronotherapy, and we'll find out what that is, for depressed patients who don't get better with antidepressants. Our guest this hour has written that clinicians have long known that there's a strong link between sleep, sunlight, and mood, and problems sleeping can often be a warning sign or a cause of impending depression and can make people with bipolar disorder manic. We'll cover all of those areas this hour. Our guest wrote a piece. Maybe you saw it. It was in Sunday's New York Times. Your sleep schedule is making you sick. Dr. Richard Friedman is a professor of clinical psychiatry and director of the Psychopharmacology Clinic at the Weill Cornell in New York. He specializes in anxiety and mood disorders, has expertise in psychopharmacology and refractory depression, and he is with us this hour to talk about the aforementioned topics. We'll be welcoming phone calls, I would imagine, because we're covering so many areas. And sleep is really vital to our well-being. They will get a lot of calls. So here's the number for you to join the conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is ideas@wpr.org. And we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Dr. Richard Friedman, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. Well, let's start with jet lag and then move into many of the other areas that you've talked about. And why don't we start with your trip to Rome and how you discovered what might be a little bit of a cure for jet lag.
Right. So, you know, what happens when you have jet lag is that, you know, you leave, let's say I left New York City and then I traveled to Rome, to a place that I love. But when you arrive in Rome, essentially there's a lag between, you know, your departure and your arrival. And you come to Rome with your New York City brain and your New York City time in your brain and in your body. And there you are in Rome, which is 6 hours later, and it takes a while for your brain and your body to catch up to this new time zone. And that lag that you experience physically and emotionally is jet lag. You know, the feeling of being spaced out, of feeling, you know, achy and not good and, you know, just, you know, it's a terrible feeling. Most people really don't like the sense of being jet lagged. And I thought about this for years, actually. I was on sabbatical for the first 6 months of this year, going back and forth between Seattle and New York. And so I had a strong interest in understanding chronobiology, which we could talk more about, and also jet lag. Mm-hmm. And it struck me as odd that in the middle of my natural night, when I'm trying to sleep on the plane, which I never can do, they're opening the shades and exposing us to bright light. And I thought, this is the strangest thing. I would never do such a thing in New York, and why are they doing this to me on an airplane? And as it turns out, it's the worst possible thing you can do to somebody biologically, because if you want to learn to adjust to a new time zone, you want to adopt that new time zone as fast as possible. And if you expose people to light in the middle of their nighttime, you shift the clock in the brain in exactly the wrong direction. So light can be really important in shifting your circadian clock, which we all have, mm-hmm. but it has to be timed so it's done at the right moment. Mm-hmm. And doing it in the middle of the night, it's well-intended by the airline industry, wants to wake you up and get you off that plane. But if you do expose people in the middle of their night to bright light, you shift their clock actually in the wrong direction and make it harder for them to adjust to the new time zone, not easier.
So you recommend that you wear dark shades, pull that shade back down again, and keep the dark shades on until, what, about noon, Rome time, and then you have a little cup of coffee, a big cup of coffee.
Exactly, because noon in Rome, or 1 p.m. in noon, 1 p.m. in Rome time, corresponds to your natural morning in New York, which mm-hmm. would be about 6 or 7 a.m., and then you go out in the bright light.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get light at that moment, your clock is going to be shifted in the right direction, so you can adjust to Rome time.
Well, I sure hope you said something to the pilot. Did you?
It's funny, I got an email from a former pilot who said, you know, we do this to wake people up on the plane, and, you know, it's news to us, and none of us have ever really had that much trouble with jet lag. But they actually, what he said to me was that we just will ourselves not to have jet lag. I think it's easier to say than it is to do. Most people try desperately not to have that feeling.
Right. You start your article with this very interesting, I didn't know anything about this, with this description of a psychiatric hospital not far from Heathrow Airport, known for treating bipolar and schizophrenic travelers.
Right.
Some of them are found wandering through the terminals. And then you go on to talk about travelers from the east and travelers from the west. And
right.
what happens? It's fascinating.
Right, right. Because, you know, there is a very strong link between your mood, your exposure to light, and the circadian rhythm. And these are people who have, you know, well-known psychiatric problems. And for those people, jet travel can be a particular stress because you're basically shifting the circadian rhythm and getting out of whack. And, you know, depending upon what direction you travel, let's say you have a history of bipolar disorder or manic depression, you know, if you travel in an eastward direction, you're more likely to get manic. So, you know, if you leave New York, let's say, and you go to Jerusalem, the Holy Land, you know, and you have bipolar disorder, and this has been well described, you get a number of people who arrive in Jerusalem and they're manic, full of energy and religious feeling, and some of them are actually psychotic. And, you know, it was initially thought, well, you know, they're overcome by religious feeling. Well, in fact, they've actually had a decompensation in their mood disorder because of jet travel. And if you go in the western direction, if you go from New York to California and you have bipolar disorder, you're more likely to be in a bad mood rather than a really good one.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
We've been studying this. You say that we have known for a long time there's a strong link between sleep, sunlight, and mood. But perhaps only recently people like you have started studying this and come up with some very interesting solutions to some problems, some mental illness problems, as well as jet lag and insomnia.
Right. So, you know, if you think about it, and I'm sure your listeners know this by their own experience, if you have a night that you don't sleep well, although most of us are horrified by the prospect of not sleeping, insomnia is such a problem, but if you stay up all night long, or you stay up a large portion of the night, you might not like the idea, but most people, or a fair number of people, actually will experience a feeling of giddiness in the morning. And some people will be somewhat hypomanic, meaning energized, despite the fact that they haven't slept. And we've known for years that there's this link between, you know, mood and sleep. You know, people who have depression. There's a famous story of a woman in Tübingen in Germany who tried to treat her own depression. And you know what she did? She stayed up all night and rode her bicycle.
Oh, my gosh.
So what she was doing was sleep depriving herself. And this is one of the earliest and strongest clues that sleep deprivation can actually treat depressed mood, and it works very, very fast. So if you keep somebody awake, which is not what they want to do when they're depressed, they're really desperate to go to sleep, but if you deprive them of sleep, it has a very strong and very rapid effect on depression, an antidepressant effect.
But only temporary, I would imagine.
Well, if you do it, yes, it's temporary because the minute they will have a normal night's sleep, they'll crash back into depression. But you can leverage this knowledge to create a treatment for depression in people that don't respond to antidepressants to manipulate the circadian rhythm and deprive them of sleep that has a prolonged antidepressant effect.
Mm. Depressed people have something wrong with their circadian rhythm. Can you tell me more about this circadian rhythm? You also talk about
sure.
the fact that maybe our circadian rhythms we've adapted to the sun cycle and the onset of darkness, but maybe our circadian rhythms are longer than that?
Right. So normally, you know, circadian means about the day, circa dia, and everybody has a circadian rhythm within the 24-hour, you know, solar cycle. All human beings, all animals have it. In fact, your brain has a circadian rhythm, which is set by a pacemaker inside the brain. And deep inside the brain, there's a clock that regulates sleep and wakefulness. There, you know, many organs have their own circadian rhythm. Your liver has its own circadian rhythm.
Hmm.
Your body temperature has a, there's a circadian rhythm which is set by this pacemaker. Your stress hormone called cortisol is under the control of a circadian rhythm. So there are many, many, many biological processes in the body that follow a circadian pattern throughout the day, high points, low points. It's a periodic cycle, and that cycle is under the control of this pacemaker and a series of pacemakers, actually. One in the brain and other organs have their own pacemakers. And the circadian rhythm for sleep and wakefulness in human beings is actually a little bit longer than a 24-hour day, which causes all kinds of mischief because, you know, we're supposed to go to sleep when it's dark and wake up when it's light. And our natural circadian rhythm is a little bit longer. Some people's is a little shorter than 24 hours, but most people's circadian rhythm, the majority of people, it's between 24 and a half and 26 hours long. Mm-hmm. So it's, you can see it's really easy to get out of sync with the natural daylight cycle.
Mm-hmm. And what about the hormone melatonin? Where does that play into our rhythm?
So melatonin is basically a hormone that prepares us for sleep. At night, you know, when the lights are dim and there's no more natural light and you have, you know, your industrial light inside, what happens is that about 2 or 3 hours before you start to feel sleepy and want to go to bed, your brain, your pineal gland inside the brain, starts secreting melatonin, basically telling your brain to get ready for bedtime. And so it's the darkness hormone. So dark brings with it the secretion of melatonin, and light suppresses melatonin. So let's say you're somebody who has trouble falling asleep. Well, the one thing you don't want to do is to expose yourself to bright light at night, because that is basically shutting off the signal that prepares you for sleep. The light signal at night tells somebody and tells your brain, hey, it's time to stay up. And darkness does the opposite. So melatonin is secreted in the dark, prepares you for sleep, and then helps set the stage. And then when you wake up and you're exposed to light, it turns off.
Hmm. So during this particular week, when we've just gone to daylight savings time, you've got an extra hour of lightness. Does that create problems for a lot of people?
Yes, it does. And a lot of people would like, including myself, would like to get rid of daylight.
No. No, it's so nice.
Most people would like to have an extra hour of light. Of course, you know, it creates problems because it's a rapid shift, and people can't respond and can't adapt that quickly to the shift. You know, most of us, if you think about it, you know, during the winter, when the nights are longer and the days are shorter, we adapt and we have for a very long time because of industrial light, we keep our nighttime melatonin secretion basically the same all year. We do this with industrial light. Animals hibernate. They basically, in response to, you know, long winter nights, they do what sensible animals do. They go and they shut down and they sleep and they turn down their metabolic process and they wait until spring. Now, there are some humans that show a response that's like that. They want to sleep more, and they want to eat more
right
during the winter months. And those people have a variant of depression, which we call atypical depression. In some ways, they are the most natural human beings because they don't respond to the effects of industrial light. It can't be, their rhythms can't be suppressed and sort of, you know, shoehorned into the, you know, daylight cycle. They're responding as if the winter is there and the nights are still longer, and it doesn't matter how much industrial light they're exposed to. Their rhythms just remain what they are. They can't be changed.
Would you like to hibernate?
Well, I'm not one of them. No, I actually, I prefer lots of heat and lots of light.
Mm. So what happens when you, this is a personal question, but this drives me crazy and it must other people as well.
Yeah.
When you know, and tomorrow is a case for me, I have to get up much earlier tomorrow than I normally get up. And I usually go to bed about 11:15.
Right.
Well, tonight, you know, it's going to have to be earlier, I think, or just not get as much sleep. Or when you have an early flight or you have something early and it throws off your normal sleep schedule. What do you do about that?
Well, you can't force yourself to go to bed earlier. You can try it. But the reason people go to sleep is because they have sleep pressure, you feel tired, and they have a secretion of melatonin. So if it's only an hour or so, it's not going to cause a great problem. It sounds like that's more of a psychological one than an actual,
right,
you know, jet lag biological effect. But if you wanted to adjust your clock in anticipation of travel from one place to another, that you could do using light and melatonin. And I described this, so that if you are going, let's say, from, you're in Wisconsin, let's say you're going to go from Wisconsin to Rome or to London, you know, you're going from one place and you're crossing, you know, six or seven time zones, and you can readjust your clock more easily by using light in the right way and melatonin in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You use light in the morning when you get there, and you use a little dose of melatonin at night to help you sleep and basically send the signal to your brain that it's time to go to sleep along with the Romans.
And that'll do it. You just gave us the answer to jet lag.
Right. Well, the trick is that, you know, the amount of melatonin it takes to produce a biological signal is a really, really small dose. Most commercial preparations give people dosages of melatonin that are much too great.
Mm.
So, you know, typically you'll buy a melatonin pill. You know, it's an over-the-counter supplement. It's not a controlled, it's not a regulated drug. So it's typically a milligram or 5 milligrams or even 10 milligrams. That's way too much. What you really need is about anywhere from, you know, a third to a half of a milligram. And that produces a level that's pretty close to what your own body will do when it's getting ready to go to sleep.
Hmm. We'll talk more about depression, treatment of depression with light, a little bit more about what our guest covers in the article, which was in Sunday's New York Times. Dr. Richard Friedman is our guest, professor of clinical psychiatry and director of the Psychopharmacology Clinic at Weill Cornell in New York. And his piece, Your Sleep Schedule Making You Sick, appeared in Sunday's New York Times. What about people who take sleeping pills? Can you use melatonin and get rid of sleeping pills? We'll also talk more about chronotherapy and how it is being used for people who have problems with depression, problems with bipolar disorder. And welcome your phone calls. Here's how you can reach this discussion, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is ideas@wpr.org. And we're on Facebook, Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network. All right, two phone calls for our guest. 800-486-8655 is the number. And we go to Sean in Green Bay. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering how a sleep cycle will change based on an individual using a tanning bed at different times of the day, either at night or in the morning.
Hi, Sean. That's a fascinating question. Well, usually the light that tends to shift the circadian rhythm is in the blue end of the spectrum. But hopefully, if you're using a tanning bed, and I hope it's not for a long period of time,
right,
you've got your eyes shut and your eyes are covered. Because ultraviolet light is harmful to the retina and to the cells inside your eye. So the answer probably is not by a whole lot, because if your eyes and the receptors in the eyes don't get light, which is the signal that changes the circadian rhythm, then there shouldn't be an effect. So I'm hoping that your eyes are really well shielded if you're in a tanning bed.
Yeah, they're not good things, are they?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's controversial. It's probably debatable, you know, in small amounts. Probably sunlight is better for you, but just the critical thing is that your eyes are really protected and shielded because ultraviolet light is quite damaging to the eye.
Thanks very much for the call. Kenneth in Janesville. Hi.
Hello. Nobody seems to want to talk about this, but Ivana Trump-Huffington wrote a book whose title I forget about her experience with the lack of sleep, where she ended up in the emergency room and in the hospital while living with Mr. Trump. And we have the president tweeting at 3 a.m. in the morning pretty regularly. And I wonder, you know, could the condition of our union be improved by a little melatonin for the president, perhaps?
I have a question. Are you running for office?
Well, maybe.
So I would say in general, you know, people have very different habits, different chronotypes, as we call them. You know, some people like to, you know, go to bed early. You know, they are the larks and wake up early. And some people like to go to bed late and into the wee hours of the morning and wake up really late. I have no idea what our president's chronotype is. But those behaviors that you're describing are worrisome and problematic for all kinds of reasons. Though I don't know that they're the real target for chronotherapy. It sounds like the answer to your question is a political one, not a medical one.
And let's tell us more about chronotherapy. What I don't think we've explored it fully.
Sure. So chronotherapy, chrono is time, and chronotherapy basically involves affecting or changing the internal clock inside your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what happens in certain conditions, like jet lag, is that you're out of sync, let's say, with the time and the place where you desire to be. Let's say I move suddenly from New York to Rome. All of a sudden, I'm 6 hours out of sync. So chronotherapy allows me to synchronize myself more rapidly with the place that I'd like to be in. And there are basically two ways that you can do this. One is with light exposure at the right time and the right dose, and the other is the same with melatonin. So chronotherapy involves manipulating the clock of the brain with the influence of light exposure and melatonin exposure. And usually when people talk about chronotherapy, they're referring to treating jet lag and or treating mood, depression.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Beth. Thanks very much, Kenneth, for your call. Beth in Milwaukee. Hi, Beth.
Hi. See, I have a question. I went to one of two environmental physicians in the state a few years ago, and he had saliva testing done and sent him off to kind of a non-traditional lab. Anyway, it came back, and the only thing I remember him telling me was, he said, when you think you're sleeping, you're not. Your body is still awake, and that's because the cortisol level was extremely elevated at the midnight, saliva test, and in the morning it's rock bottom, so I can't get up. And I suffer from light deprivation, too. I never can get myself out to get enough light, so I've got light and sleep deprivation. Any suggestions?
That's very interesting. It's hard to comment on exactly what the problem is because, you know, I would have to see these labs. But generally, what's supposed to happen with respect to, say, cortisol is, you know, during the afternoon and sort of into the evening, cortisol levels drop. And then when you fall asleep, they start to go up. And basically, it's to prepare you for the morning. You know, it's time to wake up, and cortisol is a stress hormone, and it causes all kinds of metabolic changes. So it goes down. That's the slump that people experience in the late afternoon around 4 o'clock when they get hungry.
Yeah.
Tired.
Yeah.
That's the cortisol going down, and it reaches its low point and then starts to go up during sleep. So that's the normal rhythm. Now, why yours may be abnormal, there are lots and lots of reasons why that might be the case. It's hard to know what it is. So it sounds to me like it requires an investigation as to the cause behind it. Why is your rhythm not doing what it's supposed to be doing?
Yeah, yeah. Outside of the fact that I've had a lot of stress, I mean,
Right, well, chronic stress can elevate cortisol and make the diurnal variation in cortisol, can impair the normal cycle. So you're absolutely right. If you're chronically stressed, that's not a good thing. And biologically, one effect of chronic stress is to elevate cortisol and blunt the rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find a way to deal with the stress.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Let's talk about the work with depressed patients. This is a study of hospitalized patients you write about with bipolar depression who are taking antidepressants or lithium. 70% did not have a history of drug resistance. They improved rapidly with sleep deprivation and then early morning light, and they improved within 48 hours, which is quite remarkable.
Right. So the effects of chronotherapy are generally fast. Antidepressants, as your listeners know, take several weeks typically to kick in. But when you use sleep deprivation and light exposure, you get effects that are much faster. And so these are patients who were treated with wake therapy. Chronotherapy can be done. It's flexible. There are lots of ways to do it. One way to do it is, using what's called triple chronotherapy, and it involves three things. The first is an initial night of total sleep deprivation. Now, that's hard to do when you're feeling bad, and so usually that's done, in a center that does chronotherapy, because it's hard to keep somebody awake. A family member could try it, but it sounds easier than it is. But just in terms of, what it consists of, it's a night of total sleep deprivation, followed by 3 days of what's called sleep phase advance. And what that means is that you go to sleep several hours earlier than your normal sleep. So after that night of sleep deprivation, you the following night would go to sleep, let's say, at 6 p.m.
Ooh.
Yeah, right. But it's not that hard because you've been kept up all night the night before, right? So you're really tired. So you have an enormous sleep pressure. So you go to sleep at 6 p.m., and then you get awakened at 1 a.m. So that's 7 hours. That's mm-hmm. the first night. Second night, you go to bed at 8 p.m. You can see what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you sleep to 3 a.m. And then the third night, you go to bed at 10 p.m., and you wake up at 5 a.m. And each of those nights is also followed in the morning with light therapy when you wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do those three things together, it's called triple chronotherapy, and it's very powerful. And usually one cycle of triple chronotherapy will help people with depression feel better for quite a while. It may be repeated, but you can use any and all of those components to treat depression. Partial sleep deprivation, you don't have to stay awake the entire night. Turns out that if you keep somebody awake in the second part of their sleep, meaning, let's say, you go to bed at midnight and wake up at 8, so you wake them up at 4 a.m. and keep them up from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., that's partial sleep deprivation. That has a positive effect on mood. And it's a little more practical and not as difficult. So you use that in combination with light therapy in the morning. So you can use any of these components together, but when all three are used together, you have triple chronotherapy, which is probably the most powerful.
Hmm. Fascinating. John in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I had an experience where I was able to sleep for about 9 hours for a few weeks, and it helped a lot with some anxiety problems. I was wondering, anxiety seems a little bit similar to depression on the surface, but can be quite different, and was wondering if the opposite would be true with anxiety, if more sleep can help rather than less.
That's interesting. I mean, sleep and mood are related, and mood and anxiety are related, because they share similar circuits in the brain, and it's been less well studied in terms of the relationship, let's say, between sleep and anxiety. But when people are chronically sleep deprived, which may or may not have been your experience, but if you're sleeping 9 hours, I don't know whether that's the typical amount of time you sleep at night, but that's a lot of sleep. So one possibility is it helped you because you were chronically sleep deprived, had a big sleep debt, and that was making you anxious, which it very well could. So you pay your sleep debt off, which is what people tend to do on weekends and on vacations, and you feel better. You feel rested, less anxious.
doesn't really build up over long periods of time, that it's only within like a 48-hour period, and then there's no way to make it back up if it exits that period.
Well, you can have a chronic sleep deprivation with a lot of sleep debt that you have to pay off that can go on for a very long time, not necessarily something that's short.
Hmm. So is this true then, if you go through a week getting very little sleep, maybe you get 4 or 5 hours a night, you can make it up if you sleep 9 hours or 10 hours Friday night?
You probably can't make it up all at once. You can't pay the entire debt back in one sleep cycle.
I see.
It probably has to be paid back over several days where you will sleep off that debt. You can't do it in one lump sum, so to speak. It has to be somewhat like a mortgage.
Thank you, John, so much for your call. Teresa in Madison, hi.
Hello. I actually had 3 points to make, and then listening to the conversation on sleep, I just have one other. But I'd just like to say, first of all, just a quick comment. My sister lives in England, and she has immense sleep problems. We both suffer with depression and anxiety, and I have suggested that, you know, she goes and gets melatonin. And when I was there last April, I actually inquired at the pharmacy, and you cannot buy melatonin in England. In fact,
really?
I don't believe you can buy it in Europe. So that's kind of interesting, because it's something that is definitely used here and widely used, but is simply not available. The second question is that I have often been told by psychiatrists that once you've had 2 periods of depression, it's much more likely that you will have a third and maybe a fourth. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a difference between the depression that people have because they've lost a job or they've lost a loved one, and the depression that people have because of, you know, trauma that has gone on for a number of years. And I wonder whether, you know, the sleep treatment is the same for both of them. The third thing is that I've listened to what he said about sleep. I've had major problems with sleep where, and it's always a pattern, it takes about 12 days for me to end up where I'm awake all night. And that's just the way the clock will work through over that 12-day period. I can go to bed where I'm so tired I could sleep on a log, and I'm wide awake for the whole night. So I don't think it's true that in the treatment that he was describing, that if you keep someone up all night, then the next night they'll necessarily fall fast asleep. Because there are many people who find it difficult to go to sleep, even though they're exhausted. So I'd just be interested in his comments on
that. Sure. All right. Thank you, Dr. Friedman.
Right. So, Teresa, those are fascinating questions. So I would say, in terms of the issue of, you know, depression and the response to treatment, we think of depression as a final common pathway, that it's not a single illness. It's not a single problem. There are many things that can cause depression. You can have a very, very high genetic loading for depression, so that even in the absence of a stress, you develop severe depression, or it may require an enormous amount of stress and loss to bring about a depression, in which case presumably you have a lower genetic load for depression, and anything in between those things, because depression is a syndrome that's a final common pathway that has many, many different inputs. So depending upon what the causes or the stressors are that bring about the depression, that has implications for the treatment. Obviously, you want to address some of the triggers, but in terms of the biological state of depression, the treatments seem to be effective regardless of the cause. So whether it's an antidepressant or it's sleep deprivation, it will help if the same biological state of depression is present in the person, regardless of how it's brought about. So, I mean, that's the first thing. The other is it's hard to know whether when you say, you know, you could be up all night long and you can still have difficulty sleeping. Many people who have depression have trouble sleeping, and that is a cardinal symptom of the depression. And the more typical problem with sleep in depression is people can fall asleep, and sometimes they wake up in the middle of the night, but they often wake up very early in the morning. They have early morning awakening. And the circadian rhythms, the various components of the circadian rhythms, are desynchronized in depression. And what sleep deprivation seems to do, at least in the later part of the evening, if you take away sleep in the second phase of sleep is it seems to resynchronize the circadian rhythms that are out of sync in depression.
Hmm. What about melatonin in Europe? You can't buy it?
That's astonishing. I was unaware of that. You know, it's an over-the-counter pill here, which is not regulated as all supplements are not regulated in the United States. So it's very easy to get. I just had never heard that.
No. Thank you, Teresa, for your interesting questions. Mary sends this email. Doctor, do you have any tips on sleep while on the night shift?
I'm sorry?
Sleep while on the night shift.
Ah, somebody who basically is a shift worker.
Mm-hmm.
That's very tricky. So it depends whether you want to be adapted to live, you know, so it depends how many days a week that you're working. If your entire work schedule is shifted so that, let's say, you're a resident, you know, or a technician working a night shift and you do this for a week out of the month, then you needn't shift your entire work and life schedule to nighttime. But if you do, then it would be very hard to live in the you know, 9-to-5 workday with everybody else.
Thanks very much for your message. We'll take more in a moment. Our guest this hour is Dr. Richard Friedman. He's a professor of clinical psychiatry, director of the Psychopharmacology Clinic at the Weill Cornell in New York. And he wrote a piece which we found fascinating and thought, wouldn't he make for a good guest? It was in the New York Times just this past Sunday. What's it called now? It was the Weekend Review for so many years. I haven't caught up. The Sunday Review, is that it? At any rate, that is where it was. You'll know what I'm talking about. The piece was, Your Sleep Schedule is Making You Sick. And it looks at not only jet lag, it looks at light therapy, melatonin for regulating sleep, and also for treatment of depression, which is fascinating. Here's our phone number for you to join this conversation. It's 800-486-8655. The email is ideas@wpr.org. We always like your messages on Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network. Back to phone calls. Linda in Ashland. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering about serotonin reuptake inhibitors and how they might affect sleep. And as a follow-up, I take valifaxine ER, and I'm wondering if that can affect my sleep.
Right. So the question was, these are antidepressants. So serotonin SSRIs, serotonin reuptake inhibitors like Prozac and Zoloft and Paxil and Lexapro, and then the other medicine that you mentioned is Effexor, which is a different kind of drug but also has effects on serotonin. So both sleep affect, both depression affect the architecture of sleep, and so do medications. And in complicated ways, people who have depression actually have a change in the pattern of their sleep. They go into dream sleep faster than other people, and they seem to have an increased density of it. And antidepressants do have an effect, a complicated one, on the architecture of sleep. But when they work and they help people feel better, when they help with mood, they tend to normalize sleep so that it's possible to have normal sleep, meaning you can fall asleep, stay asleep, and not wake up early in the morning.
Hmm. I'm wondering about this chronotherapy and using it for people who are depressed. Do you find that they must be on medication as well, or can it be that this therapy that you've been talking about this hour can be successfully used just by itself to treat depression?
Well, most of the studies have actually used chronotherapy in combination with antidepressants, because most of the people who've been enrolled in the study have been on medicine and either partially gotten better on the medicine or not gotten better. So they've added the chronotherapy to the medicine. But there are plenty of case reports of people with depression and bipolar depression who have chronotherapy who get better and who are not on medicine.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I was wondering about is circadian rhythms. Do those change markedly during different times in our lives? I'm thinking about teenagers who really want to go to bed at midnight, if not later, and really want to sleep in. Older people tend to have different kinds of rhythms, not needing as much sleep. Why do those change, and is it a marked change?
Right. What a wonderful question. So by nature, teenagers and adolescents tend to be owls, meaning they right. they stay up late and they get up late. And this seems to be neurodevelopment. And something changes in the brain right around the time that people pull out of adolescence, and they start actually secreting melatonin earlier in the evening and going to bed earlier. So it seems like it's a normal developmental process where, you know, early in life, let's say in your teen years, you tend to want to go to bed later and wake up later. And then as you get older, you start doing everything earlier. Now, a certain fraction of kids have a persistence of this, you know, late night behavior, and they're owls for life. So if you pull out of adolescence and you don't start sleeping earlier, you're going to be an owl. You're going to be, and as an adult, you're going to be an owl. You're going to like
you're going to be an owl. Late. I know right. a lot of owls.
Right.
Matt writes in this, I've heard of an idea of a divided sleep schedule, earlier to bed, first sleep, up for a bit around midnight, back to bed, second sleep, then up for the day. With modern lighting, that instinct for the first sleep gets annihilated, then we can't fall asleep until late and we wake up tired. Is there any basis to this?
Oh, yes. So what your listeners who sent that email in is referring to what's called natural sleep. And if you think about it, before we had industrial light, people would go to sleep when the sun set, and they'd wake up when the sun rose, which meant that the period of sleep would vary during the time of the year, according to the time of the year. In the winter, it would be much longer sleep, in the summer, much shorter sleep. Most animals have two phases of sleep, if you look at them. They fall asleep, they sleep for several hours, and then they're up, lying, but they're awake and restfully awake for about 30 or 40 minutes, and then they go back to sleep for second phase. Humans do exactly the same thing in pre-industrial societies that do not have industrial light. And if you read accounts of colonial America, they're filled with these accounts of people, you know, talking about second sleep and the whole phenomenon of waking, being awake in the middle of the night, and, you know, writing things and talking to one another about different ideas and being aware of their dreams, etc. Then came the industrial age, and with it, industrial light. And what does that do? It essentially obliterates the seasonal change in light that humans are exposed to, because we can keep light during the day constant. And let's say from 8 a.m. until 10 p.m., you can be exposed to artificial light. So the brain is getting a signal essentially that it's eternally the same season. And so you can keep people awake and let them go to sleep according to the needs and demands of industrial society by industrial light. However, there are a certain number of people whose genetic makeup and whose brains are such that the industrial light fails to obliterate this natural rhythm. Mm. And they still have second sleep. They wake up in the middle of the night and they think they have insomnia. They actually don't have insomnia. What they are primitive sleepers. They are the most natural sleepers, in a way, assuming they don't have another reason why they can't sleep, like mm-hmm. depression or alcohol abuse or all kinds of, there's so many things that can disturb sleep. But I'm assuming when I'm making these comments that there's no illness present and there's no other reason that the person has trouble sleeping. They may actually be a primitive sleeper.
Hmm. Thanks for the call, Linda. Michael in Waukesha. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen, and I hope you never retire. You're the greatest. You're the greatest.
Thanks, Michael.
there's a weekly program on Wisconsin Public Radio. Server pastor on your health, and he often recommends these light boxes for seasonal depressional affectation. But he's never mentioned they come in white light and in blue light. Do they make a difference which color you get, and do they work?
Well, yes, they're very effective for depression, not just seasonal depression, but for even non-seasonal depression. And early morning light has an antidepressant effect, and there are lots, most of them are full-spectrum light. The receptors in the eye are very, very sensitive to the blue end of the spectrum. But most of these are full-spectrum white lights that are shielded so you don't get any ultraviolet light. And, you know, typically between, 20 to 30 minutes in the morning, that's when the brain is most sensitive to light, early in the morning, every day. And that kind of an exposure has an antidepressant effect, and they are effective.
So does that mean that you should get up in the morning and go for a walk if the sun is out?
Absolutely. Mm. You know, what you're going to get in terms of exposure to light from sunlight is much greater than from any sunbox.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even healthier because you're walking. And exercise has antidepressant effects. So the best thing is get up early, go out in the bright light, walk around for 20 or 30 minutes, not staring at the sun, obviously, but just enjoying being outside and getting all of that ambient light.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Michael, for your call. Rebecca in Madison. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. So I've got a teenager who, from the time he was a little kid, had problems falling asleep despite no screen time, anything like that. And when we discovered melatonin, it was like a godsend. He was also kind of struggling with anxiety. So we've had him on a low dose every night, and we can tell if we forget, he stays awake. It's obviously working. But are there any long-term effects of taking melatonin? Are there any, like, feedback loops in the body? Are we depressing part of that? Any long-term dangers that are known?
Right. What a wonderful question. So what you've essentially been doing with your son is using melatonin to give his brain the signal to go to sleep at an earlier time, because his natural rhythm, and he sounds like an owl, is he doesn't start making melatonin until much too late. You know, so you're giving it to him, basically saying to his brain, okay, let's get you to sleep by 10 o'clock, not 2 a.m. And so you're providing a natural substance to the brain. Nobody knows. There's no evidence that there's a long-term adverse effect from using, melatonin. However, there's a long-term behavioral effect from having chronic sleep deprivation. So on the one hand, you know that, you know, you're sort of weighing the benefit against the unknown risk. Can anyone be 100% certain? No. But in, you know, all the years that people have been using melatonin, there are no credible case reports of any long-term toxicity. So I don't think that you need to worry about that. The one problem with, supplements is they're not regulated. So, you know, it's hard to know about their, you know, sort of their purity and, you know, how much melatonin they actually have in them. But that's a problem with all supplements. So I think the answer is no, that it's safe.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. One more call, Gaylene in Madison. Hi.
Oh, my gosh, hi. My 26-year-old son has autism, and the happy light zaps his violent behavior. And I have three questions. Who would the doctor recommend for chronotherapy in the Madison, Wisconsin area, also San Francisco area? I have a second question.
All right, let me get to that one because we're almost out of time. I'm sorry, Gaylene. Where would you find somebody who does this kind of therapy, doctor?
So you can call your local psychiatric association in Wisconsin. You can go online to the American Psychiatric Association and get referrals of people who are expert. I don't personally know anyone in that area by name, so that's the best way to do it.
Okay, and time for one more quick one, Gaylene.
Should you wear sunglasses?
All right.
Should you wear sunglasses for what purpose?
Just outside. Does that affect, should we all naturally be outside more, up with the sun, down with the sun?
I'm all for exposure to sunlight. It's very healthy. It is the signal that keeps us in sync with our environment. Sunglasses are great if the light bothers you, but there's no need to wear them. Sunlight is great because it helps in the production of vitamin D, which also supports your mood. So, sure, go outside.
All right. Well, this was fascinating. Thanks, Dr. Friedman, so much.
Thank you for having me. It was a real pleasure.
It was a pleasure to have you. Dr. Richard Friedman, professor of clinical psychiatry and director of the Psychopharmacology Clinic at Weill Cornell in New York. His piece, in case you want to read it, it is on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. It was in the New York Times on Sunday, and it is titled, Your Sleep Schedule is Making You Sick. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this interesting program, to Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for all of your messages and your phone calls. They're always very welcome and very intelligent questions. Thank you. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then a great hour ahead, what Donald Trump can learn from Abraham Lincoln and from Andrew Jackson.